Never before in human history has the once pristine environment of the Arctic been in such peril. I'm Nick Clark, and we're here in Greenland to discover what those epic changes mean, not just to here, but to the rest of the world. With COP26, the UN climate summit, just weeks away, we visit a remote community struggling with the challenges of a warming planet. We'll find out how nuclear waste from a 1950s US military base is in danger of being exposed by the retreating ice cap, and explore the debate over Greenland's rich resource of rare earth metals that are critical for a carbon-neutral future. Well, the climate has been changing. And a little more conversation about climate change, please. The NASA scientist who's got a novel approach to getting his message across. 16 away. We're here on the wild, remote east coast of Greenland. To me, this is nature at its most imposing. We've nosed our way up the Johan Pedersen Fjord. It's one of thousands of fjords and inlets that stretch way beyond the Arctic Circle. And that is the Greenland ice cap. And we're here because the Arctic is changing, and this year is changing faster than ever. Events never seen before have made headlines across the world. The ice cap melted at a record rate. The water it created in 24 hours, enough to entirely cover an area the size of Florida in 5 centimetres of water. Great chunks of the ice sheet collapsed and drifted off into the open ocean. And it's been so warm, there's been rain, not snow, on the summit for the first time on record. But what does it mean, and why does it matter? And why does what happens on the ice sheet have global implications? Well, the ice cap is all part of the planet's natural system, and that system has been breaking down. If we use this iceberg as a kind of canvas and put a map of Europe on top of it, and then superimpose Greenland, you can see what a colossal landmass it is. And then if we put the ice cap on top of that, well, that's vast. It's more than 1,000 kilometres from east to west, and more than 2,000 kilometres from north to south. It is colossal, and it is retreating. In fact, the amount of water that pours off this ice cap every summer is responsible for more than 25% of global sea level rise over the last few decades. And it's also responsible for impacting crucial ocean currents. Indeed, the Arctic is warming twice as fast as the rest of the world, and that's having a profound effect at a local level on communities that live along the edge of the ice cap. The village of Kulusuk is remote, wild, and still in touch with the old ways. Just 200 people live here. Even so, it's one of the larger communities on the thinly populated east coast of Greenland. Sled dogs sit out the end of summer, eager for the winter snows. Humpbacks blow, just one of the whale species that feast in these rich seas. Here, to a degree, life still depends on the yield of the Arctic waters, as it has done for thousands of years. Eustace Utwak still hunts and fishes for a living.
I have 6 hooks we put to water. Every time we catch 6 fish. 6 hooks, 6 fish, every time.
But things are changing on multiple fronts. After millennia of subsistence living, the Inuit are in the middle of a social and cultural transformation as Greenland seeks its place in the wider world. And it's happening at precisely the moment climate change is upending the environment. These empty houses tell a story of a population that's pretty much halved in 20 years or so. And those that have gone have either moved to the nearest town of Tasiak here on the east coast, or even further afield to the capital Nuuk on the other side of Greenland. And for those that remain, well, they live in this warming world of ours, and it's a world that their ancestors would scarcely recognise. Mountain guide Matt Spensley has lived among the Inuit in Kulusuk for 20 years, working with tourists who've come for the adventure of the wild. He's seen firsthand how fast things have changed.
I think because the year and the rhythm of the seasons is so important to the people here, In the sense that the ice forms in early winter and breaks in early June usually, and then that's tied in with all the animals arriving, you know, the fish and the seals and the whales. When all those patterns become kind of messed up, and essentially that is the case for people, they just don't recognise them anymore, I think it's a huge challenge for people's way of life.
Everything is on an epic scale here, with 30 metres under the glacier.
So this is driven, it's been bored out by meltwater in the spring.
And this gives you a perspective of the enormity of what's going on in the Arctic.
And it's all meltwater, it's just dripping all over us.
Yeah, absolutely.
You think about this just replicated underneath all the glaciers.
Yeah, absolutely. So anywhere that melt is going on, and that's particularly pertinent this summer because that's obviously also happened even up on the summit of the ice cap at over 3,000 metres. That melt's happening and that water has to go somewhere.
Across Greenland, it's the same story. The cultural and the natural environments are being radically reshaped, changing ways that have been sculpted in the frozen north over thousands of years. Here in the Arctic, the old and the new are now side by side. The future for both in these changing times is hard to discern. What is certain is the wonder and the power of the natural world, and the real and present danger created by upsetting its balance. The Northern Lights, of course, very much part of the spiritual connection the Inuit have with the environment. And with that environment continually changing, well, it's a hard transition to make. We spoke to Bent Abelson, who's 58 years old. He's the former mayor of Kulusuk and comes from a long line of hunters stretching back hundreds of years. Deep in an ice fjord, the majesty all around belies a frightening truth. For Bent Abelson, this is an uncomfortable reality.
Before I hear from news, smelting and warming, I don't believe them. But now I see it's true.
These icebergs have carved from glaciers that are receding fast. And the sea ice in winter is thinner and lasts for less time, which means the Inuit can't use their dog sleds across the fjords like they used to.
Now all this fjord is open.
And in winter?
In winter. Before, we can go dog sled to Tesila, no more. The changing is, for me, I think it's quick. It's too quick. It's warm now.
The Inuit have a visceral connection with the land, and that connection lives through their sled dogs. But sled dogs need ice in winter, and the ice is diminishing.
I cannot think about it. What can I say? Maybe it's crazy to... I cannot go to hunting. My parents, father, mother, and...
Generations going back.
Always talk and hunting with the dog. But for me, it will be sad for East Greenland people. What we do in winter. What can we do in winter?
For Bent, the fear is the community will continue to disperse.
Now many is living because they can see something, they can feel something, it's go down. My son's son, what they do? Maybe they move to Denmark, they move to Europe. I know if I go away, no more seal, no more animals. So if I live again this year, I will move to Denmark. Because what we do here? Nothing.
And we're on our way to see something that really demonstrates Greenland's long-standing strategic importance. During the Cold War, the US had dozens of military bases right across the country. And in places, they now present a highly toxic threat as the ice cap melts. We headed for Iqaluit, hidden away up a fjord on the east coast. Amid the wonder of the Arctic, it was hard to know what to expect. When we finally made landfall, what we found was jaw-dropping. A vast, rusting dump that has been left to slowly decay for 7 decades. During the Cold War, American commanders ordered that military bases should be built across Greenland. In fact, more than 50 were built. Now only one remains, and the rest, like this one, was simply abandoned.
Amongst it all, more than 200,000 aviation fuel drums. Many were full when they were left behind. The rusting orange barrels reportedly called American flowers by the local Inuit. But they were flowers that leached toxic contents into the soil and waterways. No one knows how much environmental damage they caused. Codenamed Bluey East 2, the base was actually constructed in the Second World War, but continued operation into a time when Russia and the United States were standing toe to toe. When it was eventually decommissioned, the abandonment was total. You know, this is really quite shocking. You've got to remember that this is in the heart of this pristine wilderness, what is a wonderful environment. And yet all of this has just effectively been dumped here. And if you think this is bad, there's a lot worse on the other side of Greenland, where a huge US base was built into the ice cap. And that one was powered by a nuclear reactor.
On the top of the world, below the surface of a giant ice cap, the United States Army has established an unprecedented nuclear-powered Arctic Research Center.
Construction on Camp Century started in 1959 and was completed inside 2 years. It housed up to 200 men in a network of tunnels who lived pretty much as they would above ground. Officially a research station, its real aim was to launch nuclear missiles against the Soviet Union in the event of war. But it soon became obvious the shifting Greenland ice sheet made the site dangerously unstable, and it was abandoned in 1967. We contacted the team now continually monitoring the site.
What we can tell from our ice-penetrating radar survey is the sort of magnitude and spatial distribution of the debris, and we can see, you know, how the tunnels have closed and they've, you know, smushed completely closed, so they have no more airspace in them.
The monitoring must continue because, although the nuclear reactor was removed, unknown quantities of radioactive waste plus 200,000 litres of diesel were left, under the assumption they would be buried forever. But now, because of climate change, they could be exposed to the environment, possibly within 80 years.
The rate of warming that the Greenland ice sheet is facing today is pretty unprecedented in the last 12,000 years, just how fast it's warming and how fast the ice sheet is retreating. So Camp Century is now experiencing more melt than it has in the past.
Whether or not Camp Century is exposed in the future depends on whether we reduce emissions today. And Greenland's prime Arctic position means all this could happen again. It's now back in the crosshairs of several nations vying for Arctic dominance, including Russia, China, and the United States, with Donald Trump famously wanting and failing to buy Greenland.
Well, a lot of things could be done. I mean, essentially, it's a large real estate deal. A lot of things could be done.
But perhaps the country can benefit in some way from the legacy of someone else's war. Denmark is funding a $29 million cleanup of US military installations in Greenland. And now there are even plans to turn this rusting legacy of the past into a tourist attraction. A contrast to the regular guidebook Greenland, to say the least.
So we've come here to the south to find out more about the science behind the Arctic melt. But first, we're heading for a glacier, and Andrea here is our skipper. She knows these waters very well. Where are we heading and what are we hoping to see?
We are going to Kalegali Glacier, and we are going to try to see calving a new iceberg, but it's really active this year.
So on the way, we can already see here at the end of summer, the sea ice, the winter sea ice, beginning to form a thin layer on the surface of the fjord. But it shouldn't stop us today.
We are going to try to move in between the ice slowly.
The Arctic is warming twice as fast as the rest of the planet, which means the sea doesn't freeze as much as it used to. And less sea ice means more sunlight is absorbed into the ocean. The warmer ocean melts the glaciers faster from below, while warmer air temperatures melt the glaciers and ice sheet faster from above. Meaning more icebergs are carved into the ocean, the ice sheet diminishes, and there's ongoing sea level rise around the world.
This is how it sounds and how it looks when the ice cap meets the sea. You see the azure blue of the ice there that's caused by the great pressure of the glacier above it, of the ice cap just weighing down on the ice. And these continual cracks as the ice falls and collapses off into the water, and these seabirds just wheeling around, feeding off these rich nutrients that are churned up by this continual flow of meltwater that's coming off the glacier in vast quantities. Oh, look at that. The Greenland ice sheet and the effects of it melting are so important to us all, there's a huge amount of scientific research going on. Deep within a fjord, oceanographer Lawrence Mayer uses a probe to gather data from the water.
In terms of climate change, too, with this we measure how much freshwater is actually coming from the ice sheet. So we see in recent years the amount of freshwater has increased strongly because the melt has increased strongly. Then also we measure temperature of the ocean because the ocean in many parts of Greenland is in direct contact with the ice sheet. So if the ocean warms up, then the glaciers will melt faster and faster. And that's something we actually see.
It's also important to take core samples from the fjord bed.
Everything that happens in the water column at some point ends up at the seafloor, and it's part of your ecosystem, of the food web in those fjords. So at the end, we are interested in how climate change will impact the food web of these marine fjords.
At the end of every summer, satellite trackers establish how much Arctic sea ice has been lost. This year, it dropped to an area of just 4.72 million square kilometres, its 12th lowest extent on record. So, sea ice is currently declining at a rate of around 13% each decade. And to put that into perspective, an area of sea ice equivalent to a country the size of Austria is being lost each year. The Arctic is complex and hard to predict, but we do know for sure things are going in the wrong direction. And it's having global consequences. There's another big research program called the OMG Project, which actually stands for Oceans Melting Greenland. It's a NASA project which maps the ice melt to better understand how warming oceans affect the melting of the ice sheet. We spoke to the principal investigator, Josh Willis. He's got a curious way of engaging people in climate science.
For the last 6 years, we've been measuring how the oceans here change, and also watching the ice as it grows and retreats. And by relating the ocean changes to the ice changes, we're hoping to get better at predicting just how quickly ice here is going to melt and sea levels are going to rise all around the world. For several years, we've flown an airplane with a radar to measure the ice. But what we're doing here right now is we're measuring the oceans. So we have an old DC-3 aircraft that was built for World War II. Repurposed for science about a decade ago.
3, 2, 1, drop!
And we've been flying around dropping sensors into the oceans to measure the temperature and the saltiness, not just at the surface, but all the way down to the seafloor. What happens in Greenland does not stay in Greenland. Ice lost here raises sea levels all around the world, across Europe, across the United States, all the way to Australia. So our global ocean is shared between every country that has a coastline, and when ice here melts, it affects them all.
We are approaching the COP26, the UN Climate Summit. It's been billed as the most important one yet. What's your sense of that?
Well, time is running out. If we want to avoid the worst consequences of climate change and planetary warming, we have to start reducing our dependence on fossil fuels and find alternative energy as fast as we can.
And finally, Josh, you have a kind of curious way of engaging people with climate science. Tell us about that.
It's a scary thing to imagine that we're reshaping our planet's climate. And so I find a joke here or there, occasionally a song, or maybe even an Elvis impersonation, does a really great job of connecting with people.
Well, the climate has been changing, 'cause of greenhouse gases we spew.
A few years ago, I wrote a song about climate change to sing as Elvis. It's called The Climate Rock. I find that performing it, and it engages people in a way that's really meaningful. They really enjoy it. And plus, I'm a big ham, and I love it, too.
You take a bunch of weather and you average it together, and you do when you climb and rock. Oh, yeah.
Here on the southern tip of Greenland, the frozen north gives way to something altogether more lush. It's why the Vikings came here 1,000 years ago. Indeed, it's why Erik the Viking called it Greenland in the first place. There are old Norse buildings scattered around the area. They came here to farm, which is something that still goes on today. But it's what lies beneath this ground that's now causing upheaval. The whole region is rich in rare earth minerals, and international mining companies want to get at it. But many Greenlanders are not happy. A statue of Leif Erikson, the Viking who's said to have discovered America 400 years before Columbus, gazes out over a scene that might surprise you. When you think of Greenland, this is probably not what comes to mind. But it's the end of summer, and the sheep have been rounded up for market. Farming is part of the way of life in the south, almost as much as hunting is elsewhere. But these lands also hold new possibilities. I headed up a mountain valley near the town of Narsaq. The rocks here hold some of the world's richest deposits of rare earth minerals. This is the site of an old uranium mine. It's long been decommissioned, but now international mining companies want to dig deep again.
The rock we see all around us here was formed 3 or 4 kilometres beneath the Earth's crust, and then about 1 billion years ago, these mountains just reared up. And they reckon that within this area alone, there are 1.5 million tonnes of rare earth minerals, with another 26 million tonnes at a site nearby. And all of that combined is enough to supply the world's total need of rare earth minerals for 115 years, which is why this whole area is just so valuable and has so much attention. So what exactly are the resources here?
Well, the main mineral mining companies want to extract from here is called ludgervite. It contains uranium, zinc, and most importantly, rare earth metals. Rare earth metals are a group of 17 elements, and once refined, they possess unique magnetic and electrochemical properties, which can be used in electric vehicles, wind turbines, smartphones, even combat aircraft. The problem for locals is the uranium byproduct of the mining process.
This is my mother's father.
I met with Neil Sikariason, who's been fighting the proposed mine for years.
If the mine gets the go-ahead, the first thing that will affect us is dust, followed by radioactive radiation. Those things will start from the first day of production. That's going to affect our water supply, and it's only 3 kilometres away from the mining site, meaning we won't be able to continue living in Narsaq.
Public meetings were held earlier in the year with the mining company involved, although they didn't attend the most recent ones. They're Greenland Minerals, who are Australian and part Chinese-owned. Their CEO told Al Jazeera,
"There's been misinformation about the project in the community that does not accurately reflect the impact assessments and has caused concern among local stakeholders. This is unfortunate when the project has met stringent environmental standards. Mining would bring jobs, business opportunities and economic stimulus for the local community."
But many fear the majority of those jobs will be given to foreign workers. Across Greenland, the issue is so controversial, it toppled the national government, and in came the Indigenous Inuit Party, who have promised to stop the mine. But they recognise a future government might reverse that.
I do not think it's fair to put on the Greenlandic people to accept mining of uranium because of one commodity that can also be found other places in the region. Also, keep in mind that rare earths are not only used for the good, they can also be used in the weapon industry. I will put a bill in front of the parliament banning uranium mining, and if that goes through, the Kvanefjeld project will have a difficult time obtaining an exploitation license.
As the day draws to a close, more sheep are being rounded up. The farmers have grave concerns about the impact of toxic waste on the land and waterways the sheep thrive on.
The water will be poisoned and the sea will be poisoned and then we will be poisoned. I will never accept the mining. The Greenlandic culture have been keep going in 1,000 years. Not many people could survive here, and it is be strong to live here in Greenland. The money will just go to the company, not so much to the people that are living here.
Long ago, the Vikings saw the potential of this part of Greenland. 1,000 years on, outsiders are once again eyeing the country's possibilities. And as the ice sheet melts, making more mining sites accessible, interest in Greenland's rich resources will only increase. So that's it for this Planet SOS special. It's been a trip where we've seen all too clearly the urgent need for action, the importance of this pristine environment, and the critical need to protect it. From the busiest cities of the world to the remotest parts of our planet, all eyes will now be on that crucial UN climate summit in Glasgow in November. From Greenland, it's goodbye.